This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, April the 23rd, the eve of the 2025 NFL Draft, and that's our focus over the next hour with the Detroit Lions holding the 28th overall pick in the first round. So with any number of directions the Lions could go, we're going to explore some of the possibilities. And remember, when you hear the acronym BPA over the next several days, and you will if you tune into any draft coverage, that stands for Best Player Available. So that should help you. Among our list of guests tonight, the best people available. We'll hear from the voice of the Lions, Dan Miller, a contributor here on sportscaster.com. We'll get his perspective on what the Lions may do. Also, former Lions tight end Rob Rubick. He was a star at Eastern Michigan University before hearing his name called in the 12th round back in 1982. And he'll tell you, 40 years ago, they didn't have the same pomp and circumstance that they do today. They also don't have 12 rounds any longer. More recently, Jeff Heath. He went undrafted out of Division II Saginaw Valley State before going on to have a 9-year NFL career as a safety. He played for the Cowboys, played for the Raiders and the Saints. Unique perspective from Jeff Heath, one of the best to ever come out of Lake Orion. This year's draft is taking place in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Of course, last year it was held right here in Detroit. Of all the major sports, the NFL draft is the most anticipated, the most talked about, the most scrutinized before, during, and after. How does it work? When did it first begin? And what do we expect? Sportscaster.com's Gabe Loper. He's pursuing 2 degrees at Wayne State University, and this is his commentary on what you need to know about the upcoming NFL draft.
The first round of the NFL draft is just 24 hours away, and all 32 teams, along with their fans, are gearing up to see who comes off the board first in Green Bay. But what is the NFL draft? What does it mean, and why is this event in April such a big deal for a season that doesn't kick off until August? Well, whether you're a hardcore fan or just getting into the sport, understanding how the draft works gives you a deeper appreciation for how teams are built and how the stars are made. We'll break that down, how the draft is, how it works, and take a quick look at its brief history. So let's get into it. The NFL draft is a yearly event where the 32 NFL teams select eligible college football players to join their rosters. Think of it like a job fair, except instead of resumes, you've got highlight reels, combine stats, and pro day performances. Each team is awarded picks over the course of 7 rounds with the orders set based on previous season standings, along with compensation picks for lost players and coaches, and free agency being awarded as well. Unlike the other major sports here in the U.S., the NFL does not use a lottery system to determine its draft order. The worst team picks first, in this case, the 3-win Tennessee Titans, while the Super Bowl-winning Eagles will carry the last pick. Teams will spend months, sometimes years, scouting players. They look at performance, character, health, and how well a player fits their system. It's not just about raw talent, it's about making the right pick for your team. The NFL draft will take place over the course of 3 dates. Day one features round one. This is where we usually see the biggest names go off the board, the most drama, trades, and fan reactions. Day two includes rounds 2 and 3, where teams will find solid starters and future stars. Day three wraps up rounds 4 through 7. These later rounds may not get as much hype, but plenty of legendary players have come from here, like Tom Brady, who was picked 199th overall in the year 2000. The 7th round also features the hailed Mr. Irrelevant pick of the draft, awarded to the final player taken off the board. This year, Mr. Irrelevant, as Mr. Irrelevant in years past, will take the famed trip down to Disney World, such as current 49ers starting quarterback Brock Purdy. Each team will be on the clock for a certain amount of time. Teams will have 10 minutes to either make their pick or trade their pick in round one, while less time is given to each team in the later rounds. If a team runs out of time, which has happened before, the next team in order can jump in and pick first, though the original team does not lose their turn. And when a player gets picked, that's when you see all the emotional reactions, the hugs, the tears, and the dreams coming true. 257 players will see their names come off the board in Green Bay over the next 3 days, with the 49ers having the most picks this year with 11. Let's rewind a little bit and look at how the first draft started. The very first NFL draft was held in 1936 at the Ritz-Carlton in Philadelphia, Back then, the league needed a fair way to spread talent across teams, instead of rich teams holding the best players, as we see with the Dodgers and the MLB today. The first draft had 9 rounds and no live coverage. The very first pick that day, Jay Berwinger, a Heisman Trophy winner, but he never played a single down in the NFL. Fast forward to today, and the draft is a massive event. It's been held in cities like Chicago, Dallas, Nashville, and even last year here in Detroit, drawing huge crowds and millions of TV viewers. In recent years, it's become a part of a week-long celebration with concerts, fan zones, and red carpet moments. Unlike other major U.S. sports teams like the MLB and their farm system of AAA and the minor leagues, and even the NBA with the G League, the NFL and their rookies will have the ability to make an impact on day one. Not just in rookie camp, but day one starters like Nick Bosa in 2019 or Aiden Hutchinson will see the field and make a direct impact for the teams that drafted them. So, with that being said, 257 players will see their NFL dreams come true in Green Bay. It's never a guarantee of success in the NFL. Some will be boom, some will be bust. Some will be the next great superstars. Some will just become role players or even end up in leagues looking for a second chance like the UFL. Whether or not that occurs, it's all a waiting game. But that's the fun of it.
That was Gabe Loper from Wayne State University. You know, we told you all you needed to know about the NFL draft, about its inception, dating all the way back to 1936. Did you know the Lions were originally known as the Portsmouth Spartans from 1928 to 1933? But they've been the Detroit Lions from 1934 on, so 90 years of Lions football. And of course, the draft itself has evolved over the years as the National Football League has 32 teams. So I want to take you back now to 1982. The Detroit Lions, first round pick that year was Jimmy Williams at pick 15. All-American defensive end out of the University of Nebraska, going to play 12 years in the NFL. The majority of that time was with the Lions. And Detroit made 14 picks that year. Their last pick in the 12th round, pick number 326, was a tight end from Grand Valley State. His name, Rob Rubick. Rubes, welcome to the show.
Dang, Johnny, you bring back memories. You did some research. I like that.
I want to ask you, you know, when your college career ends, you're thinking what? How real was your dream of going to the league?
Well, you know, after about my sophomore year, I walked on at Grand Valley. I wasn't recruited out of high school by anyone, and I walked on. But then as my career went on there, I started getting pretty good. And going into my senior year, I had pretty much most of the teams in the NFL had come and worked me out. There was a couple combines back then that would work out for a group of teams. And I was being projected as a fourth or fifth round draft pick. But then my last game in college, I blew my knee. And then when I came by in the springtime after, because back then, Johnny, you blew your knee. I had a full-length cast for 6 weeks. And the only team that came by to work me out was the Lions about 10 days before the draft. And I ended up working out well enough, and then they took a shot at me, and I healed well and got some really good breaks in training camp. You got to be good, but you got to be lucky. The backup tight end, Ulysses Norris, got hurt like the first day the veterans came in. So I got to run number two all camp behind David Hill. And I made the best of it, and 7 years later, I was done. I became a school teacher, which I enjoyed for 30 years.
Well, no, you've had a brilliant career playing and obviously in education as well, and as a broadcaster now too. So obviously the injury, and that's something that a lot of athletes can identify with. A lot of times it will end careers. For you, obviously it was a setback and it maybe disrupted your draft stock, but you were able to still realize the dream. But how did you find out? I mean, it was different then than it is now with all the pomp and circumstance, but how did you find out you were drafted?
Well, I'm going to have to make this quick. The second day of the draft, it was 2 days then, and it was about 2 p.m. The draft ends at 4:00. I was tired of waiting. I didn't think anyone was going to draft me. I'm playing dunk ball on a 9-foot hoop down at an elementary school by Grand Valley. And my girlfriend at the time called the school because someone from Seattle came to my apartment and says, we want to sign you. Now it's about 3:00. Sign you as a free agent. He said, the draft is over. I said, oh, okay. Well, I had a teammate of mine was starting a tackle there. I called my coach and I said, Coach Harkema, I said, Seattle wants to sign me as a free agent. He said, well, just wait a couple minutes. Some other teams might call and offer you. So then about 3:30, the Lions called and said they want to sign me as a free agent. And I said, I got a guy from Seattle. I think I'm going to sign with them. It was Larry Seipel, the receivers coach. He said, well, don't do anything until I call you back. So about 3:45, the phone rings, and it was a secretary. And she says, hang on. They put Coach Clark on, and I hear the Detroit Lions with their second pick in the 12th round draft tight end, Rob Ruby, Grand Valley State. I'm thinking, and I said, who in the beep is this? This is Coach Clark. I'm like, whoa, I thought it was my buddies upstairs messing with me. The Lions must have liked me enough that they thought they might lose me as a free agent, so they took their last pick in the 12th round. And the rest is history, Johnny.
7 years with the Lions, 82 to 88. You're a color analyst now for Eastern Michigan. Spent a number of years as a studio analyst on the Detroit Sports Report. And then you and I worked together on Lions Live on Fox Sports Detroit.
Listen, I'm going to tell you right now, I've worked with Fred McLeod, Dan Dickerson, Matt Shepard, some of the greats in the business. No one is more fun to work with than Johnny Kane. You loved your attitude towards broadcasting. You enjoy, you have fun. And these guys I work with are some of the best there's ever been too. And they're really good. You have a different approach. I really like it. For an analyst to work with you, it's always a pleasure.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I really do appreciate that. And I've always enjoyed working with you, doing high school games together. We've had a lot of fun because you got the same vision, man. It's supposed to be fun, and you can empathize and sympathize with these players because you know how hard it is to compete. And obviously, you did it on the highest level. You've been around the Lions for a long time, obviously, as a player, as an analyst. They have 7 picks this year. I've listened to Brad Holmes and some of his pre-draft discussions. From you, say from a fan standpoint, because I know you're a fan of this team as well, where is the biggest area of need?
Well, I don't necessarily address the biggest area of need because they addressed that last year, and that's a rush end. But we don't know about Marcus Davenport. How good is Davenport going to be? You know, we didn't get to see him. Is he what they want opposite Hutch? And they don't draft for this year. They're drafting for the future. I would be shocked to see him take an offensive lineman, Johnny. The reason this team is where it's at with Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes is they've had the best offensive line in the NFL for the past 2 seasons. And when you have the best offensive line, all of a sudden Jared Goff's the top quarterback. He's not without a good line. Jahmyr Gibbs gets room to roam. Sam Laporta gets time. Amon-Ra gets time. J-Mo gets time. So all of a sudden, because you have such a great offensive line, you can run the ball at different times throughout the game. It makes your whole team better. You know, Decker's getting old. You know, Glasgow had the struggles last year. Mahogany looks like he's going to be a plug-in and play guy, but you don't know. You look at Ragnow, and you're pretty healthy, which is good. And, you know, you already got Panay signed. So if they take an offensive lineman, I'm fine with that. But all things point to taking a defensive end, to give Hutch some help until Hutch kind of gets back on his feet and creates some more pressure. And if you get a guy that's another dude, well, you know, when you get 2 dudes on the edge, that's why they get paid. Because that guy who's throwing the ball, he don't like it.
No, you're 100% on that. You know, look, you know, I think the 49ers have the most picks in this year's draft, and capital is currency. With the Lions having 7 picks, it's still a good number. When your window to win, when you come off a 15-win season, are you a piece away, right? Is there a temptation to just add depth at a particular position? Or do you say, no, we've still got to go best player available to make our football team the best it can be? I mean, is it tougher when you're a team that's contending, that's that close to making a Super Bowl?
That's a great question. But it's all about philosophy and what Brad's philosophy and Dan's philosophy is. Different organizations have different philosophy, and you gave the 2 avenues they could take. And I'm not sure exactly what theirs is, but this team was the best team in football last year. There's no doubt. If you take 6 defensive players in that Super Bowl off of Philadelphia, or 6 defensive players off of Kansas City, let's say 4, maybe they're missing 1 or 2. They don't win this. The Lions have no one left. And I'm not an excuse maker. But, Johnny, sometimes there's facts. You have 6 of your starters out on that defense. I mean, you're playing with the JV team. I mean, you got guys, no, these are NFL players. Don't get me wrong. But there's a reason there's starters, and there's a reason that there's backups. The starters are better. And you lose 6 starters, and you're playing young guys who are getting better and trying to fit in, and you just keep losing. It was tough. And that's what's a sin. And that's why I was not disappointed at all with last season. They were the best team. 15 weeks Monday morning, Johnny, we're pumping our chest, brother. I mean, we are loving life because we get 15 games, but we got exposed. The playoffs come, and all of a sudden our defense isn't getting the stops, and our offense makes a couple goofs. Now it's done because the offense, there was so much pressure to keep it going that, you know, they really couldn't do it. So, yeah, getting back to the draft, I don't know. You know, like I was, who's he going to say? I don't know. I don't watch film on these guys, to be honest with you, Johnny. I know positions. They could use the lineman. They could use a rush end. I think they could need depth at linebacker. And, you know, the cornerback position is so hard to evaluate coming out of college. So you can never take too many DBs and roll them out there and see what standing when the smoke clears.
All right, last question. I'll be brief. does the player they take in the first round, whether it's 28 or if they move up, does he have to be an impact player as a rookie in order for this team to take a step forward?
No, he doesn't. He has to be able to play by the end of the year and be a quality player. He needs to create depth. They don't have a glaring position. It's not like they don't have a quarterback, or they don't have a running back, or they don't have a receiver, or they don't have a linebacker. They got top guys at every position on this field. Now, do they have, you know, your two safeties? They're pretty good. Our corners, we think, are going to be good. The linebackers, Campbell's growing. Anzalone's pretty good. But, yeah, I don't think. I think they need to create depth. Whoever it is has to be a player, either towards the end of this year, during the season, or definitely for the following year. They're pretty good right now. This team doesn't have that many holes.
You're the best, Rubes.
Thanks.
Our next guest is Taryn Fritching, a junior at Troy Athens High School, who one day hopes to work in sports broadcasting. Taryn, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much, Johnny. It's great to be here again.
Well, it's good to have you on it, and I'm interested about this one because you had a chance to talk with Jeff Heath, who played at Saginaw Valley State. His story is like defying the odds, you know, as we're talking about the NFL draft and everybody hoping to hear their name called. That wasn't the case for Jeff Heath, although he was able to go on and carve out a 9-year career in the NFL. How was your connection with him, and what'd you find out?
I never had met Jeff, I believe, until last year when I actually covered a game at Lake Orion and I finally met him. I was asking him a lot of things about, like, what advice would you give? And he was saying, be willing to learn anything new.
You know, for any of us that played high school sports, and for some of us that maybe had dreams of playing in college, and if you made it that far, you maybe had dreams of making it to the league. Less than 2% of college football players ever make it to the NFL. So when you're watching the game on Sunday and you hear your buddy or your friend say how bad a player is, you just got to remember that they're in the top 2% of the best, and perspective is always important. Here is Taryn Fritching with Jeff Heath, undrafted, but went on to star in the NFL.
I'm really excited to be joined by Jeff Heath. He had an incredible career in the league, but what makes his story really inspiring is how it all started with going undrafted in 2013. Jeff, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. All right, so you grew up in Lake Orion, Michigan, and went to Lake Orion High School. You played football and soccer. From what I understand, you were a really good soccer player. Was it always the mindset to play football at the collegiate level, or did you want to give soccer a try?
Yeah, you know, I kind of went back and forth. It was like whatever season I was in, I was just all in on that sport. During the fall, I was all in on football, loved watching football, everything. As soon as it flipped to winter, I was basketball, and same thing with soccer. So I was just always really in the moment. And I guess I always thought I was going to have a better chance of playing college soccer only because I just felt like I was getting looked at more for that, the team I was playing. If I had to pick one sport that was my favorite, it was always football. My dad coached and my grandpa played. So that was always my true love.
Yeah. And then speaking of college, I'll bring it to Saginaw Valley State. You ended up playing there. What were some of your reasons on why you chose Saginaw Valley State?
Well, the main reason was they were really the only option I had. I wasn't really heavily recruited at all. I talked to the guy who was recruiting that area. I met him, you know, one time. I think he was actually kind of recruiting one of my teammates who also played in the secondary with me. And they invited him on a visit to Saginaw. And I kind of like tagged along. I think they were really interested in him. Not so much interested in me, but I went with him, and we were able to test. When you visit a D2 school, you can like run drills and do 40s and stuff like that. So I tested well and then kind of was on their radar. They made the option for me because they were the only school to offer me a scholarship.
So for the entire draft week and weekend, what was the process for you during that?
Yeah, there's a group. It's not like a specific team, but there's a bunch of teams in the NFL can join this group where they all share information and like testing and test scores, 40 times, all that stuff. So they're kind of making their rounds to, you know, the D2 schools. And me and a bunch of my teammates kind of went to our day where it's kind of like they're just gathering a bunch of information. And I ran a good 40. This was before my senior year of college. So at that point, I was kind of on their radar. I got scouted a little bit during that season, was training up for the draft. And then, so like a week before the draft, I actually did a private workout with the Colts. That was the team that I thought was showing me the most interest. There wasn't really any talk between me or teams or my agent and teams like, we think he's going to go here, we think he's going to go there. I had no idea what to expect. The week of the draft, I was like, you know, if I get drafted, great. I wasn't expecting to, or I wasn't expecting not to. I really had no clue. It was stressful. Even though I didn't have expectations going into the draft, it still was, just a stressful process. And like, you're sitting there watching the whole thing and you're hopeful. And then especially you start seeing other safeties get picked and you're like, well, I know that guy. I've seen that guy play. I think I'm better than him. So you start doing that whole thing. And I think once the draft started coming to an end, I was, you know, a little obviously upset. I was hopeful I was going to get drafted. I didn't. But then as soon as the draft is over, basically teams start signing free agents, and that process goes really fast. So within like 10 minutes of the last pick being called, my agent had called me and was like, hey, Dallas has a little contract offer for you. It's very small. I mean, it's basically just like an invitation to try out for the team. One of 90 guys that participates in the offseason. And I told him, I'll take it. I didn't want to decline any offer. I was like, I don't want a team to call me, say no, and then have no other teams call. So I'm like, hey, who had the first team that calls, tell them I'm in. So I was really excited. After all that happened, it was kind of like the disappointment of not getting drafted just went away, and I was just excited. It was really cool. Obviously, like, the Cowboys is just historic franchise, so I thought it was great.
Yeah. So then heading into the Cowboys, talk about your first training camp experience, and how did you feel being from Lake Orion and then you go to such an iconic franchise such as the Cowboys?
It was eye-opening, definitely. For one, obviously the NFL game, like, I knew it was going to be hard and fast and all that stuff. Before training camp, we have a whole off-season program, like the OTAs and mini camp and rookie mini camp, all that stuff. So I had been there for a few months and like kind of got my feet wet a little bit before actual training camp. And I just remember like the first week where it's like all rookies. So I'm only with the rookies, all guys my age. They kind of like let you learn the ropes a little bit. And then I remember the first day I saw like the veterans working out and they were just running plays on air. Like the offense, there's no defense. Offense is just running plays. And I was like, holy cow. Like, it was just a machine. They're so fast. Everything is on time and it's really cool. So then going into training camp, there's 90 guys here. I know they only keep 53. They bring some back on the practice squad. So I was really trying to not play like the numbers game in my head. I was just trying to, whenever I got opportunities, and in the beginning of camp, they were few and far between. We do individual drills and all that kind of stuff. But once we got to like team, where we're going against the offense, the vets and the starters and the backups got most of the reps. I would literally go and maybe get four plays a whole practice. So I was just trying to really make sure that if I did play four plays, they were good. I didn't have any mental errors, made sure I was paying attention to meetings, paying attention on the sidelines, just so that if I did get an opportunity for whatever reason, that I was going to be ready to go. That helped me a lot because then we had a few injuries. I started playing well in the preseason games. Then we had a couple injuries. So I was getting more opportunities. And then before you know it, the camp flew by. And it's like when you make the team, it's not like this big moment where they tell you, hey, you made the team. You just don't get cut. So it was like, oh, wow, I guess I made the team, man. We got a game in 4 days and I need to buy an apartment and a car. Yeah, it was a whirlwind.
And then a lot of people only do focus on the draft picks, but undrafted players like you do have incredible stories. What would you say to current college players who might not hear their name called out on the draft days?
I would say, you know, once you get into a camp or you get into a team, going back to what Coach Garrett said, just focusing on the process, that whatever process that you need to follow for you to improve as a player, coaches know that you're not a finished product. When you get to the NFL, you're being coached by the best coaches in the world. And if you are truly receptive to coaching and you absorb it and you kind of leave your ego at the door, then you can grow as a player so much. And I think that's what coaches are really interested in. Are you coachable? And that's what coaches really, that's what they want. So I think just being consistent, being coachable, and then when you get your opportunity, just, you know, be on top of it. And the only way to do that is to, you know, follow a process and be coachable. So I think keep working. If it doesn't work out with whatever team you sign with, there's 31 other teams that are looking for players. You need to just find the right situation at the right time. And then if you take advantage of the opportunity, then you know, you can make a career. And that's what I ended up doing. Just keep working hard and be coachable.
Jeff, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your journey. You've had a great story. And it's always a great reminder that the path to the NFL does not need to be the traditional route.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Cooper Schoenberg.
I'm Carter Lutz.
We are taking over for the Johnny Kane and NFL draft coming up soon. We got a couple of hot takes coming in. And what better way to start it off than by our very own sportscaster, Ryder Sloan.
So I just want to start off and talk about the third pick in the draft. New York Giants, I think they're going to select Abdul Carter, and this is why. We saw the Steelers last season. They had an amazing defense, but not really an offense with many stars, no firepower. But they ended up with an above 500 record and making the playoffs. I think if the Giants select Abdul Carter, they'll be a little like the Steelers last season, with an amazing defense and just adding Abdul Carter to that, I think they really have a chance to be above 500 next season.
Above 500. Okay, so on the Abdul Carter side of things, I know Cooper and I were mock draft enthusiasts. That's a popular one, and it's for the right reason. They need an edge rusher if they get him. They pair him with Thibodeau and a couple other guys. So for the Giants, that definitely makes sense. I think you're on the right track there. And Abdul Carter, people think he's the best player in this draft class, but with how positions are needed, especially the quarterback position, he's probably going to end up falling to two or three. But on the Giants side of things, you mentioned the similarities between New York and Pittsburgh. And Pittsburgh, who had a good season last year, went to the playoffs. But without an offense, that's where they struggled last year. How can you really thrive in the NFL and see a jump from the third overall pick all the way up to around 500?
Well, we've seen it happen in the past with multiple teams. And you know what they say, defense wins championships. But I believe if you're scoring just around 14 to 17 points a game, but your defense is holding up, I think you can win games.
I think what's going to be key for the Giants specifically in really getting over that 500 bump is going to be the later round draft picks and really starting to build your offense. But reverting to that third overall pick, you know, when you wear number 11 at Penn State, that means that you're the top dog and you're the top dog on defense. That's exactly what Abdul Carter was at Penn State. And that's exactly what I believe as well he will be in the NFL. Me personally, my hot take is that he will be the best, not one of the best player in this draft class. So I got to say, I like the take out of you and the take from the Giants at number 3 overall.
Now, on this edition of Open Mic, we also got a chance to hear from a sportscaster star, and we're going to hear what he has to say. Gabe?
One of my predictions for the NFL draft, Travis Hunter. I've heard so much about him being able to potentially play both sides of the ball. I don't see it happening. I see him playing just one, being drafted as a corner. He may take some reps at receiver, maybe 7 or 8 snaps a game, but I don't see him playing both sides of the ball. Travis Hunter, we drafted as a cornerback. May play some snaps at receiver. Drafted as a corner. That's my take.
Well, Gabe, I mean, this is an interesting spot we're in because it's not too much of a hot take. It's not saying this guy's going to go here, we're going to trade here. No, it's a flat-out statement about a guy and his impact on the league. And I have to say, I think I disagree with this one. I think we're going to see Travis Hunter at receiver a little bit more than what Gabe anticipates, especially because the way the NFL is changing, the way things are rolling towards, and Travis Hunter, who just is coming off a Heisman, he did a lot of special things at receiver. So I think we should have that expectation. I think the reason that he isn't going towards maybe the 8th, 9th, 10th pick that we usually see from the top corners is because of the X factor he plays at receiver as well as cornerback.
Why is he being drafted so high? Just like Carter said, he will be playing both wide receiver and cornerback. That's what he was in college. That's what I foresee he will be in the National Football League. That's what gives him his X factor to make athletic catches on the offensive side and leap up for a little interception on the defensive side. I think that you can see him playing both wide receiver and cornerback in the NFL. Nothing's going to change. Now, we also had the chance to hear from fellow sportscaster Taryn Fritching. Taryn, give us your hot take of the NFL draft.
For the first round, I believe that Cam Ward, quarterback from Miami, will go first overall. However, it definitely is a little bit of a race between him and Shedeur Sanders, another quarterback, and he is from Colorado. So we will end up seeing who goes first overall. I definitely think that Travis Hunter will be a top five, if not a top three pick in this draft. He is too good of a player, both on the offensive side and the defensive side, to not be selected in those top five slots. As for Heisman runner-up Austin Jonte, I believe that he will absolutely go somewhere in the first round. It might be a little bit surprising, but he might end up going in the later picks of the first round. But I definitely hope that he goes to a team that is in dire need of a good running back. As a Michigan fan myself, I am hoping that Mason Graham goes somewhere in those top 10 picks. Obviously, I hope top five. So for me, I am hoping that Mason Graham goes a little bit early on. And for the Detroit Lions, to wrap it all up, I do believe that with the loss of Kevin Zeitler, the Lions will hopefully go for another offensive guard just to kind of strengthen up the offensive line that we know and we obviously all love.
Well, Taryn, thank you for that. A lot of different predictions coming at us, a lot to unravel. Cooper, hold up the U for me. Miami's finest right here, University of Miami. Cam Ward will go number one. So we'll just throw that out of the way because that's happening. And he's going to be absolutely outstanding for the Tennessee Titans. Ashton Jeanty, Cooper, I'm excited to hear your opinion on him. She said maybe late first round. I think we could be looking at maybe a top six, top eight pick. You got the Raiders at six, Dallas at eight. I think we're going to see him around there probably. That's going to be really fun and exceptional to watch. And then her last take with the Lions, we got to save the Lions talk with our guy Dan Miller coming up. But with Kevin Zeitler leaving, you and I were just saying they picked the best player available. And with that one, I kind of like the pick there going guard potentially.
Ashton Jeanty is really interesting to me. Obviously, the Heisman runner-up. And Taryn, you talk about him going in the later picks of the first round. But I'm going to actually agree with the man to my left right here. You look at a team like the Raiders hiring Pete Carroll, and I think he's going to want to make a statement. Look, he's in Las Vegas. Go big or go home. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And I think Jeanty is going to stay in Vegas for a long time. I think that they need that X factor, that explosion. Alexander Mattison not really doing it for them. I think that they go with the bold pick in Ashton Jeanty. Now, talking about Mason Graham, it's really rare that you get a guy of his size, his stature, that can play so well on the D-line. I think he will definitely be a top 10 to a top 15 pick. Don't know if he'll be in the single digits. Definitely not one of those later picks, but it's going to be really interesting to see how those Michigan Wolverines stack up in the first round. Obviously, you got Kenneth Grant, you got Mason Graham, and you got Will Johnson. Then going for the Lions, you got Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell running the helm, and they are just bold guys looking to get the best player possible.
And as I wear my Lions blue, we now welcome on a man very special and close to our hearts, Mr. Dan Miller, the voice of the Detroit Lions.
If you want me to take a guess at what the Lions are going to do, look, looking at their depth chart, in looking at what there could be a surplus of in this draft. And you got to kind of look at that because they're picking 28th. It's not like they're picking third. So I think if you look at that, to me, it says defensive line, either interior or edge, or it says offensive line, probably somebody that plays on the interior because that's where their biggest need is. But a couple of things there. One, I don't think it's out of the question that they trade up, because I think they feel like their depth chart is in a good enough position where they can give up some picks if they like a guy and move up. And number two, Brad Holmes said it. We should all listen. Don't be fooled by what you think this team needs. He's going to take the best football player available. And if it meets a need, that's fantastic. But otherwise, he's just going to stockpile guys and then sort it all out when they get there for training camp. So we will see what happens. If you want names, just look at the defensive lineman that should be available there, the offensive lineman that should be available there. But I would warn you, you might be wasting your time because Brad Holmes could throw something at us that we are just not expecting.
Well, Dan, it seems like you're living in our heads because, as we just said, reacting to Terrence's prediction, I think Brad Holmes just goes with whoever is available, the best available solution. Now, me personally, what I want and predict is definitely some help on that D-line, just like what Dan said. But obviously, we saw an injury-ridden D-line last year with DJ Reader, Ali McNeil, and Aiden Hutchinson, not really finding any consistency, but definitely something you want if you want to make a big-time playoff run and win a Super Bowl, something we didn't have last year that I think Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell really want to get this year. Carter?
Listen to Dan, the wisest man of all. He said listen to Brad Holmes, and I think you got to listen to Brad Holmes. You never know what he's going to do, but as he even said, trading up potentially, giving up a couple picks, making a splash. He said it. We said it. Go for the best guy available. They might even trade a player in there. We heard some rumblings. Maybe the fastest man on the team. We'll see what happens. But Dan, thank you. I like his prediction a lot, Coop. Well, Cooper, it's been an absolute pleasure filling in for the one and only Johnny Kane.
It was an absolute pleasure hearing our fellow sportscasters giving us their hot take. But again, catch us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. on WJR Sportscasters Open Mic.